and welcome to It Is Not My Fault This Podcast Is Not Popular, coming from the OASG, where we talk about anime, manga, and anything else that comes to mind.
Random stuff, basically.
Yeah, random stuff. I am Muse.
I am Justin.
And I'm Alcina.
Who are you?
Right. New person this week, not just me and Justin yelling at each other.
Hey, Alcina. Welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. It's exciting to have a third person
finally. Yay. So, okay, before we can actually go on into other stuff in the podcast, we do have to get a little bit more information about you. So, what exactly are you doing on this podcast, Alcina? Are you, like, part of the OASG or something like that?
Yes, I'm the designer at OASG, so I create graphics from time to time.
Yeah, yay. She's a very good...
Not a,
she's very
helpful.
A very, very talented artist, graphic designer. Basically, the logo podcast that you've probably seen on iTunes or on the site, she created it. She is awesome.
Yeah, it's very helpful for those of us who cannot draw.
or like, very scared of Photoshop and stuff like that.
Yes.
Okay, just a little bit more, Alcina. What got you interested in, like, doing graphic design?
I think it originally is because on our old computer, we had a Photoshop and Illustrator, and I just happened to have free time and just play around with it. And in the long run, I just ended up doing more graphic design as time went for clubs, and now it's a full-time job. Yeah.
Well, Alcina, thank you for doing some graphic design work for us, and I will be looking forward to asking you future stuff down the road.
Okay. Hopefully that answer was okay. I'm not really sure. Yeah.
Oh, no, that was great. Yeah, we're happy to have you here. Have you have someone else to bounce our randomness off of? All right, so this week, last podcast, we joked about doing a Fire Emblem podcast.
And this is like asking everybody who they're going to marry podcast.
Hopefully not. Probably not. It's not that far in the game just yet.
I'm not too far in mind either, because... Well, you guys already know about it, because I was ranting about it on Twitter, but I got my game copy very late.
Oh, it must have been tragic. Really, like despairing right there.
Well, it was weird when, because I pre-ordered the collector's edition, and it shipped late, which was fine, that kind of thing happens, but what got me was when the day it was supposed to arrive, I got a tracking update that it went... to a city in the exact opposite direction of mine, and it was even later than it was supposed to be. So that was weird. I've never had that happen before. It was just killing me slowly on watching everyone else play with their castles and stuff. I'm like, no. But yeah, I have it now, and I'm really, really enjoying it, even though I'm not too far in it. But
which one are you on right now?
I'm playing Birthright, and I'm on chapter 13 right now.
Okay.
So, not too far in, but enough to kind of get a handle on it. And it's been fun so far. I like the style of it.
I just realized it's going to be really hard to talk about this, because I'm playing Conquest right now.
Yeah, it's like, you got the different paths to start with.
Yeah.
And then you don't want to spoil it for people.
It's so weird. It's like, oh, we're playing Fire Emblem Fates, but we're playing Birthright, I'm playing Conquest, how can we really talk about it without spoiling stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I guess when you visit other people's castles, we'll still see all the characters. I mean, some people are, like, really paranoid. They'll just run through the castle and grab whatever resources your characters are giving away and, like, try not to read the text, but that's some people.
Oh, I don't care. I'm just like, oh, look at that person. I am totally getting that person when I play Conquest.
I'm mostly just like, who are you? I've never seen you before. Why? Can I get you on my left? Can I get you on my path?
Yeah, that's been my thought process, too. I'm like, where is this person, and are they available in Birthright?
Although I did get spoiled or something, though. I did get spoiled or something because of what happened. I don't know if you... I guess you may have noticed, but you know what happens to Gunther, right? Like in chapter... Is it chapter 2? No, chapter... It has to be chapter 3. When they go over to...
Yeah, it was 2 or 3.
Yeah, where... That guy Hans just pretty much sent him to the bottom of the cliff or the canyon.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, this Fire Emblem's really serious. Then I found out what actually happened to him.
Well, I don't know that bit, I've got, like, a feeling because he's still, like, on the unit list in the records hall, and I'm like, okay, then. I'm just not gonna...
When I went to my castle, I saw him there, and I'm just like, wait, what the... Didn't you die? Why are you back? What's going on here? So I won't spoil what actually happened to him, but as you can probably tell, he's somehow still alive.
Yeah, I had a feeling that he's gonna come back in some way. I don't know how that's gonna play out in Birthright, but... Well, we'll see. Or maybe they'll do something completely different. It's just there to make me want to play the
maybe
other
Maybe they'll explain it the way they explain the Deep Realms.
I don't think I've gotten far yet either. Yeah, this is hard to talk about. I don't know what to say about...
Well, okay, then I guess just general impressions of Fire Emblem Fates.
Yeah, why don't we just talk about the gameplay, like the gameplay changes from Awakening.
So much more strategic, because enemies can now do pair-up. And it's not just the same pair up as Awakening. You have pair up attack and then pair up guard. If you pair up two units, you're basically just gonna be, you're basically their guards. Build up the meter. You can basically use that as a strategy, like for the last boss, something like that, where your guard is up. They can do a lot of damage, but they actually can't hit you because you have your guard up. Then there's pair up attack. You can't pair them up. If you put them side by side, you can do a lot of damage. It's just that you're going to be very weak defensively, though. It does leave you open to, like, getting attacked by more than two people. Or just the two people on the enemy side. It's a neat strategy it's really brutal. Like, the enemies literally just try to go do that. Like, they don't attack. Like, it's interesting. Like, they don't attack you immediately. Like, the first unit comes up, they don't attack you. The second unit comes up, then they attack together. It's just like, it's a new layer of strategy that you couldn't see in Awakening because they didn't have the enemies pair up. And then the pair up rules were kind of weird in Awakening. For me, honestly, like, I couldn't really tell how to execute pair up attacks and then pair up guards. But now it's a little bit more easier, so I can tell how it works.
Yeah, because in Awakening, it was just like, you just get a status boost if you have two characters together, period. So I was just like, all right, everybody's paired up and we just tank everything. And that's not really that much of a strategy. In Birthright and Conquest, that is a lot more of a strategy. You have to really think about, you know, do I want these characters to fight as a team? Do I want the defense boost? And as I'm getting further on in Birthright, it's more like, it's not like one-on-one unit battles, but more like 4-on-4, which is really interesting game mechanic. I'm enjoying that a lot. I like that change. So what do you think, Alcina?
I really like that they introduced the dancer class. Well, what I call the dancer class. I guess it's technically singing in this version. Way earlier than in Awakening. Yeah. I guess it's... I'm still grouping all my characters together because I'm really paranoid about losing characters, even though I'm playing on casual. So far, it's been okay. Just, like, grouping everyone together so you can get this support conversations.
Yeah, that's like, you got that double thing of like, oh, should I put this character next to the one who they have the support with, or should I, you know, focus on a different relationship to get different kinds of, you know, support status? I like that they've taken that extra, you know, like, the visual novel element of the game and made it part of the strategy even more than what they did with Awakening. So, good job on the gameplay, for sure.
Story, on the other hand, is a little bit of a different story, I think. But I can't really say for Birthright because I haven't played it yet, though. Conquest?
Okay, well, for Birthright, it's kind of weak. In my opinion, it's kind of weak. Like, it's a weird situation where it's like, I like the characters a lot. The storyline is like, but, you know, Fire Emblem has never had the best storyline, so I can't really exactly knock it for that. But since the characters are so interesting, I wish that the storyline would
Just say Path of Radiance had probably the better storyline, mostly because of the situation. Had a mercenary of all people that's rising up to try and help his country out, Crimea out. I like that storyline, but you're kind of right in the sense that most Fire Emblem games, like, the story seems kind of grand, but you're really playing the game, well, for me personally, I think you're playing the games for gameplay and the characters. Everything else is almost secondary.
Yeah, because the lead up to where you make the choice, where, you know, you get the split, where it's either the Birthright path or the Conquest path, For me, playing it up until that, I was just like, there is no reason for me to go, like, storyline-wise, for me to go down Conquest.
Hmm.
You know, because it's like, oh, well, you're playing as this character who's been, you know, locked up in a fortress for their entire life, you know, wants to see the world, you know, finally gets out, finally gets, you know, see their dad, work with their siblings, and then only to find out that their dad is using them to, try and start a war, you know, as basically as a sacrifice, find out everything about their life was a lie, you know, and then be used, you know, again, you know, as like a weird suicide bomb plot, and it's like, this guy is a jerk. I have absolutely no reason, storyline-wise, to side with these people, and I thought that was kind of strange. I was kind of hoping that there would be more of a split there, but there wasn't, at least in my interpretation, there wasn't. It's basically more like, I really like the noir siblings, but otherwise it's like, if I was actually Corin, I'd be like, no, you're insane. You know, that's why I played Birthright first, because just storyline wise, it made no sense for me to go back to noir.
I wouldn't put it like that. I mean, you've known these people forever and they, not your dad, but your siblings have treated you well. I mean, you just met these people at Hoshido. You don't really know them that well.
Right, and that's the one thing I think that noir has in its favor. That's like the noir siblings, that they are your family. You have grown up with them. But I did just... I just don't like the turn on how... Well, I mean, you'll see when you play with, right? They just immediately turn on you, and it's like, wow, this none of this really
justifies. Well, it's both ways. Make your choice, it's going to be both ways. They're going to basically be against you. Except until you play Revelation, Revelations, which I have no idea how that's gonna work out.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how Revelations then handles that. Maybe that will be much better, and then all my complaints can go away. Yeah. But we'll see. Have to wait on that.
So Arsene, what path are you on?
I ended up getting Birthright because I saw the pre-orders from EB Games right after they posted on Twitter, and by that time the special edition was all gone.
Oh, yeah, that went so fast.
I was thinking when the time came, when Revelations comes out, I'm probably going to get that. Also, there's, like, a character in Conquest I'm really interested in, so I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
Oh, which one, or can you not say, because of spoilers?
I'm pretty sure you would have seen him in some other people's castles. Like, I think his name is Flanell in the Japanese version.
Yeah.
He's like manning the store in some of my friends' places. I'm like, you're offering me to let me take all these other characters home, but you're here in the store and you can't take you, so it's okay.
Yeah, I'm interested in him too.
Yeah.
Flanell. Yeah. Is that Keaton?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he's kind of cool.
I'm also super interested in the Awakening characters who've been, like, renamed.
Oh my God.
I need to know what your deal is in this universe. I really, really do.
Inigo?
Laszlo.
What are you doing here?
Laszlo, I know who you are. Like, what
you're
the heck?
Not Laszlo. Why are you calling yourself that?
They're like, your sword hand is twitching.
Yeah, I'm like, come on.
Oh, Wayne.
Did you guys download the free DLC?
I did.
No, I need to.
Come on, it's free. It's free.
No, I know. I am out of space on my memory card. I need to track down a spare memory card and get that.
Oh my God.
But no, I want that too.
Yeah, I've been just using it to grind my characters, especially the village girl I picked up. Does that count as a spoiler?
Mozu? No,
no,
she's
I
not,
don't
it's
think
not a
so.
Spoiler.
That's pretty early.
It's not
on.
A spoiler.
Okay.
There's always one of those. It's like it was Donald in Awakening. There's always that one village character who's
Donald,
like, who's the weakest at the start, and then they end up being like the best stat gains in the entire game.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you want to use them. She's a little cutie. I like her.
Yeah. My Mozu right now is kind of broken, but it's really hard to train her in Conquest. It really is. And then you say you can grind and stuff like that, but there's no such thing as grinding in Conquest.
Yeah, there is in Birthright.
Like after the first time, I think you play the Awakening DLC, that's it. You can't grind anymore. That's it. You can't. They won't, like, you'll go into a battle, you'll kill somebody, that's it. No experience. What?
Oh my gosh. I will take that as a warning. It's pretty easy in Birthright. They've got, like, every single chapter there are little challenge deals and all that, so it's pretty easy.
Yeah, I don't...
You just need a couple extra
levels. You can attack your friend's castles for EXP. Yep.
That too.
You can't do that in Conquest, as far as I know. It depends. I think it may depend on what level, like, if your opponents are high enough level, and then... I don't know if it's because it's hard mode, because I'm playing it right now on hard classic. But yeah, depending on what castle it is, you can't grind there either. you can increase your castle points, though. Like, once you do a castle battle and stuff like that, you can increase your castle points. So if you're in, like, my castle and stuff like that, you can build that up. But yeah, if you're really strong and your opponent's, like, really weak, you can't grind. It's possible.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I am keeping permadeath off for that. I don't
want to do that. Well, no. Good thing is you can't die in the castle. In castle, but I'm not sure if your main character dies. I'm not sure, but I tested this out. I let I think it was Azur who got killed off for in my castle. But after the battle was over, she was back in my castle. So I was like, okay, so castle battles, your character's not going to die, which it does mean a little bit more risk you can take, but the main thing is you can't really, as far as I can tell, you can't grind there.
What's interesting, like, just on the subject of dying and coming back, like, you know how in Awakening, if your avatar character or Krom died, then that was just instant game over no matter what mode you had, right?
Yeah.
For Fates, if you're playing with permadeath off, if your avatar dies, you can still keep playing.
Oh, really?
Which really weirded me out, because that happened to me, like, two chapters back, because I messed up. And so I just went, oh, well, okay, game over, but then it just goes back to the map, and I keep going. I'm like, what? Okay.
Yeah, that's news. That's news to me.
New, I guess? I don't know. That really weirded me out. I was expecting instant game over.
How do you lose, then?
I don't know. Like, part of me wants to push this, and part of me just wants to just leave it alone.
Now I know that I can probably beat well, I don't know if I can still beat Lunatic on that level, but maybe I might want to try it out, Lunatic Casual.
Yeah, I don't know if that's I don't know if that's a thing in Conquest or if it's just a Birthright. I don't know, but yeah, that might be worth trying out.
I don't know if I want to subject myself to Lunatic on Conquest. I don't know about that.
Yeah, from what I've heard, just. Well, from what you've been saying and what I've heard elsewhere, even just hard on Conquest is, like, one of the toughest that's, you know, the series has to offer.
The big thing is, like, it's not like the maps can screw, like, it's not like a bad map design or anything like that. It's just, you make this one little mistake, your character's done. And then if you're really into that character, or you just don't want to have your characters die, that means it's it. Like, that's game over. Like, I think Conquest Chapter 10, that was, it's like a defense position map. We have to defend for a set amount of turns. It is nuts. Like, you have characters literally coming out of the wazoo just to go and attack you, or just go to the spot where they have to seize that part of the map. And you have to basically make sure they can't get by. They can't, like, just do anything to get there. And then Takumi, with his freaking Dragon Vane power, he what he does is later on he kills, like, there's like a water, like river, like there's a river in the on the map. He uses Dragon Vane to remove that. So that, I think that happens like either turn 7 or something like that, sometime like late turn 7 or turn 8. Once he does that, that means more movement for the characters. So all that means is that you have to, like, once you like spread out and like handle like the first couple waves, you have to basically send all your characters back just so you can protect the spot. But then you also make sure, if you're really character conscious, you have to make sure you protect your weaker defensive characters, because then they're gonna get screwed over.
Oh my gosh, with all of this, Fates has something for everybody.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
The old school fans who want, you know, the insane challenge, and for newer people who, you know, just want to have some fun with strategy. I do like that about it a lot.
Or making pairings.
Yes, that's
who shipping. Yeah, making pairings. Who did you guys... Who are you guys shipping?
I don't know yet. I'm still looking at a lot of the support pairings, because I go for the ones of, like, I could see them, like, as a couple, just based off of the supports, not just, you know, like, they'll have those supports for just, like, we're going to cook, and one or both of us sucks at it, and that's it, and, like, I need a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I'm just putting them in battles right now just to, like, try to get a sense of what their conversations are going to be like. I think so far I have won is Kaze and Obori, because Obori's just trying to catch Kaze because he's a ninja, right? And she's like, oh, we're going to catch you one of these days so you can stop sneaking up on me. And he basically offers to wear a bell just so she can hear him.
Oh my gosh. I have not seen that yet. That sounds great.
Why am I thinking of the Kakashi right now in Naruto? Why? Why did this game make me think of that right now?
Because that's the part of the game that is incredibly anime.
You know that transformation that Kamui did was so anime. I think it was chapter 5.
Yeah, so anime. Yeah. Turn into a dragon. Yeah.
Do you guys prefer to give, like, the weapon Yato to your, like, Korin, or do you give her or him or her the dragon stone so you can transform the dragon during battle?
Depends on the situation for
really
me.
Does. If
they're up a bunch against the, like, heavy soldiers and I'm just like, yeah, dragon stone. Otherwise, I just go for the sword.
I've mostly been using the dragon stone because for conquest, there's just so many, like, different, like, opponents that can, like, do a lot of damage, so I need that defense right now.
I am so glad they got rid of weapon, you know, use limits or just breaks. I'm so glad that's gone. I hated that so much.
The Fire Emblem guy that's played like every Fire Emblem that's come on the West says, It does. I will say it does provide like a different strategy, but for now, since I'm playing Conquest, it's like it's almost like because. You don't get that much money. You have to, like, basically, like, open chests and stuff like that to get money. Maybe you'll run into an opponent that might have money. But, I just wonder if this is a long-term thing for this series or if it's just, like, this one-time thing for Fire Emblem.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about that. I mean, just for the record, I've only played two other Fire Emblem games. That was the Sacred Stones US release and Awakening. And in both of those games, I just hated the weapon limits because I never had any.
Really?
So
especially in Sacred Stones, like how?
I don't even remember anymore, to be honest. I just remember that being a huge source of frustration for me. And then with Awakening, I would have to grind even more for more money to the point where I ended up buying that DLC thing just so that I wouldn't have to deal with it because I'm impatient. So just for that reason, I'm glad that that's out. And it does lend a different feel for the strategy than before. Whereas before you had to be like, okay, I only have one more shot on this silver weapon. I have to make it count. And now it's more like you have to think about how your characters are growing on their stats and keep an eye on that in a different way. It's more like your standard RPG equip thing now.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to trying out forging my own weapons. I don't think I ever even did that in Awakening. Like, I played it through and I basically only used the weapons that came in-game and didn't try to make any of my own. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Why does it seem... You haven't tried to forge a weapon yet?
Well, I don't think I have the option yet. I never tried it in Awakening.
Oh, I meant in Fates.
I think I got the building, but I haven't built it yet. I know there's, like, one character, at least, the power is if his sword is longer than 20, like, characters, it's, like, activates another skill. It's, like, a super Chunibyo power.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I've been trying to forge weapons, but I don't know. It feels a little bit more confusing than past Fire Emblems, because it basically revolves around how much, like, or you have, like, the crystals and stuff like that you have, and then if you have the same weapon. So I feel like it's a little bit more confusing than past Fire Emblems, like, when you try to forge a weapon.
Hmm. Because past ones, it was just pick two things, throw it in, see what you get, right?
Like, you just, like, choose a weapon, and then if you just want to increase the power of it and stuff like that, then you could just do that.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, just, I don't know, it just feels a little bit weirder. I don't know if it's just because it's hard to get used to. But, I don't know. I find it a little bit weird.
All right. So, any other Fire Emblem thoughts?
I'll say this for Conquest. There's this one chapter. I think it's 14. That was probably the easiest map of the game. Like, aside from, like, the early portions of it, obviously, but, like, this, it seems a little intimidating, but it was actually the easiest chapter. Like, I made little mental mistakes, but it was probably the easiest chapter in Conquest.
Like, easy by Conquest standards?
Then. Yeah, easy by Conquest standards, or in my, for my elitist Fire Emblem self, by Fire Emblem standards, it was really easy. But, I feel like the game gets a little bit easier the more you play. It just seems like it's not like it does seem intimidating because the enemies seem really strong, but just keep in mind that no, you're technically stronger than them except maybe the boss, but it's just that there's a lot of them and there's less of you. You just have to mind where you're at and then see how much your characters can take damage and all that assessment stuff, all that strategy stuff that you know you gotta do that makes makes things easier. Glad the series is selling well. Glad people are playing it. And I'm looking forward to continuing to hopefully beat this game. At least beat Conquest first. then I'll get started on Birthright.
Yeah.
I might just play Birthright like normal and classic. I might just do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I really like the UI. It definitely reminded me, it's pretty similar to an Awakening. Especially when you created your character, Corrin, and they let you choose based on the chart where you can switch between, do you want your hair to be long or short, or do you want it to be cute, or you can change the color, and depending on your prior choices, it would narrow down the choices for you.
Yeah, I really liked that change where it just went from, you know, we're going to scroll through a list to, you know, here's an idea of what they look like before you select it.
Yeah, I think the social, the other aspects, like adding my castle, being able to customize your character, they definitely improved on that. So you have more options of what to do in the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the accessories. The accessories are so cute. Yes. Like some of, I think so. There were some of them really odd. Like you can put them in bath towels for some reason, or you can put a pink beret,
yeah,
which I'm kind of looking forward to putting on Roma when I get him. So he can wear a pink beret in my castle. And like attacking buildings, that's definitely something I couldn't understand. I had to look it up because they were like, why would you want to attack a building and not another character?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a lot of interesting extra stuff in it that makes it a lot more fun on a social level instead of just, you know, not just the tactics stuff and the strategy stuff, but also like taking advantage of, you know, the internet. So that's been really interesting.
I mean, we could probably still keep talking about Fire Emblem, but I think there is other stuff we should be talking about. Like, aside from Fire Emblem, have we doing anything else aside from Fire Emblem?
Yes, we are technically an anime podcast.
Yes.
So we should stop talking about video games for once.
Watching anime and catching up on K-dramas.
Yes. Let's see, I'm still mostly just following Erased. That's still my number one favorite from this season.
Yeah, it ends on like an... It always ends on a cliffhanger, every episode. Mm-hmm. Except this one was less harrowing.
Every time.
This one wasn't as bad. I mean, well, it's still pretty terrible, but at the same time. And also, like, I think I'm still catching up on Showa Rakugo, but it got to the episode where the character is, like, they're acting in a play together. It's pretty funny. It's definitely a little bit different from the other prior episodes. I'm definitely looking forward to catching up.
Yeah, I've been hearing some good things about that series. I'll probably check that one out as I'm thinking about dropping a couple of shows. Like, Nora 9 is one of the more confusing things I've watched, since it doesn't seem to know what it wants to be.
Yeah, seems like most of the Otome game, like, adaptations aren't really sure what they want. Like, they want to get all the routes, but they don't want to give it away at the same time.
Exactly. It's just, even by Otome game adaptation standards, it's a little strange. It's like, the show's been pretty obvious, like, which characters are going to be with whom. You know, like, what the end game is going to be. And yet, it took an episode to have a dream sequence that was, like, three different fairy tale rewrites. Like, one couple's in Red Riding Hood and other ones in Cinderella, etc. But it was like this, the whole point of the episode was apparently to be like, oh, you like this person, and I was just watching it like, yeah, no duh. We've known this for 5 episodes now. I don't know what the point of this was. And, yeah. Just even on the romance level, it's weird.
There was another show that was added later than the original announcements for who's streaming what. And I think it was, like, This Boy is a Professional Wizard?
Oh, yeah. I do not know what that is about, but I remember seeing that announcement.
Yeah, the animation is really a little bit odd. I'm still going to wait a couple episodes to see what I actually feel about it. I think it's supposed to be a BL.
Yes, I think the only other thing that I'm really, really enjoying other than Erased is the show about the singing idol statues.
Seko Boys.
That one's my other favorite. Yes, Seko Boys. That one is hilarious every week. Yes. Because it's short, and most of the humor is derived from the fact that they are literally statues. So they just run with that. It's like, there was that episode where one of them was, like, in a crime drama, and the whole time they're like, what is he even going to do in it? And he was the statue that was the murder weapon. it's just inherently ridiculous, and it runs with it.
It's great that you two are actually watching anime, and I'm on the other hand, and I'm currently behind on anime. I do hope to catch up to some stuff. But I hope to catch some stuff this week. On the opposite side, I've been reading a lot of manga recently. Reading a lot of Crunchyroll manga. Silverina, Yuki Holder, Sweetness and Lightning, Inuyashiki.
Oh, that one's so good.
Bunch of stuff on Crunchyroll, and then I recently just read for Yen Press. Hopefully, a review will be going up this week on Taboo Tattoo. I remember when I was at Anime Expo, and I was in the room. Out of all the titles that were announced, this was the one title I had missed, like actually writing down and taking it and tweeting it and stuff like that. And I had to like confirm, Hey, Kurt, I know you announced another title. What was that title you did announce in that splurge of titles you guys announced here? And it's called Taboo Tattoo. And I'm like, okay. I had no idea what it is. And then based on my Twitter timeline and based on the people around, nobody knew what it was either. It's serialized in a seinen magazine, but it mostly feels like a shonen except for the violence. The fighting is pretty top-notch. It's pretty good. It does have some nagging issues that make me go, I think I need to see the second volume before I can think, like, maybe this is a worthwhile series, but, this is one scene that basically makes me wonder, is this how the manga's gonna be? Like, the main character, his name is Segi, he ends up, asking his childhood friend, it's a girl, Toka, to make this complicated curry dish, just as a little bit of a joke, because in a way, he's trying to reward, like, he obviously understands, like, yeah, you really helped me out, but she's insistent on making anything he wants, so he tried to make something up. She was determined to actually, like, find a way to make this curry dish or whatever, so she ends up trying to make the dish, and while that was happening, she was trying to look for recipes. He ended up going to his phone to try to call his grandpa. He gets his phone snatched away. When Toka finally realizes Segi's not there, they have a panel where she's mad, but immediately we see her panties. Immediately. And I'm just like, okay, this was not... That wasn't necessary. Really wasn't necessary, guys. So it's a weird series, I would say. But aside from that, that's about all I caught up to.
Yeah, and that's been, I mean, other than scratching my head over Nora 9, that's been pretty much it for me.
Manga's just weird. But yeah, that's basically what I've been
looking
to.
Anime's weird. Our hobby is weird. It's all weird. But we love it anyway. Alright, so let's move on to, you mentioned the anime and Kickstarter earlier. With Funimation.
Yeah, Funimation like recently just announced that they were doing a Kickstarter for the Vision of Escaflowne. Yeah, that drew a lot of confusion, and I'm like, oh man. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute. exactly how expensive has anime gotten that Funimation of all people was doing a Kickstarter. I think that's what drew more attention, the fact that they were doing a Kickstarter in the first place. It's just that Kickstarter is just generally something you use, I was just trying to get to fund the project and stuff like that, but for a company as big as Funimation, when they make so much money from, Dragon Ball and stuff like that, to do a Kickstarter, it's very telling. Now, this is just, apparently, just to see if they want to do a dub, because of, there's this weird, thing where there's new scenes in the Japanese edition. It's, obviously, it's not dubbed, so it's like, do you want start a new dub for that, or just do a new dub in general? Or do we just gonna have Japanese, we're gonna be through Japanese with just subtitles, but it's gonna be HD? That's the question, but it's just the fact that, Kickstarter and Funimation doesn't really compute to me. I think that's what's, confusing everybody.
Yeah, and it's for specifically just a new dub. It's not, to bring it over, because the other thing I thought of immediately when I saw that announcement was there's the Skip Beat license that they're trying to bring over, and they're doing that through Indiegogo. But that's, that's the entire license. That it's either going to be here because of this, or we can't do it at all, kind of deal. With this, it's just a new dub. It's either going to have a new dub or not. It's not going to not happen at all if it doesn't get funded. It's just going to be without a new dub.
Yeah, it seems like a very broad way to try and get a litmus test to see if people are interested, but it's a really odd way to do it.
Yeah, because I've never seen Escaflowne, so I don't have, a lot of... I'm completely neutral on the title. I don't know that much about it. I mean, I know fans of it who like it, but I don't know if it has that kind of pull, That I don't know if there are that many people who like it that much to want to get a Kickstarter, especially with the amount of money that they're asking for this dub. I don't know if that kind of interest is out there for this title.
Yeah, I don't think I saw Escaflowne. I haven't seen Escaflowne, so I don't really have too much of a strong opinion on it.
Yeah, it's like a... When I think of Escaflowne fans in particular, I think my boss when I was still an undergrad. They liked Escaflowne, and they were 10 years older than me, so I think of Escaflowne fans as being slightly older. So maybe they have more money to throw at this kind of thing, but I'm not sure how much that generation of anime fans is involved in, in terms of, are they hearing about this Kickstarter? Are they still involved in the community in that way? Do they care about this enough to want to throw money at it? I don't know if that's true. It's just very odd.
Well, we're definitely going to find out, that's for sure. But yeah, it just makes you wonder, I think people have wondered if Kickstarter would be, the kind of future for anime. But would it be a future in this way? Instead of creating a new project, would it be used, will companies actually use it like this? Would they try to do something like digital manga, where they're trying to bring a title over and doing a Kickstarter method? Are anime distributors or anime publishers going to do the same here?
Mm-hmm. I just always think of, whenever I pledge something on Kickstarter to any project, they always have that little disclaimer, it says Kickstarter is not a store. This is not a guarantee. You're not purchasing a product. You're putting money towards something that you would like to see happen. And in that way, I can see why they've decided to do this, to see if there is interest in a dub. But at the same time, it's also saying, okay, but if there's interest in a dub, you have to pay for it. And that insinuation is what makes this a little strange, I think.
Right. We'll just have to see. But if this is more consistently, I don't know if I would I don't know if I would really agree with this method of using Kickstarter this way. But yeah, it's definitely tough. Yeah, I would say it was definitely something I would be kind of against. Especially if you're a company like Funimation. I guess kind of a generalization. It's probably not true, but what does it say about your company if you have to go through this route?
Mm-hmm. And what does it say about what they think about the anime fan base and how they want to further their model? I understand that, dubs are expensive, and we want to, pay the voice actors, and we want to pay for the licensing fees, but at that same time, why are we pushing all of this off onto the fans if it's not... Because I keep thinking of, when the bubble burst in 2008 and everything just, went away for a while. I keep thinking of that. I keep thinking if we're pushing it to the point where you have to have the fans fund an entire thing, why are we doing this project then? That just makes me kind of concerned. So what do you think about this, Alcina?
Well, I've seen projects for Kickstarter. Like, I pledged some money for Under the Dog, which is a project I think is supposed to come out either this year or next year. But that's only for the one episode, and they're all working on it to, as, like, a project unto themselves. Even though there's, like, all these issues with changing studios. But in this case, this is Funimation doing a Kickstarter in order to make a dub. And, I don't know, I probably wouldn't, like, I haven't watched Escalfone, so I'm not really sure what else I can say about it. Yeah, I don't have anything to say on the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I don't have any opinions on the project itself, I'm just slightly concerned about what kind of precedent this is setting for Funimation. I don't know what this is going to mean for the future.
Right. Well, we can just hope it's a one-off thing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, a special circumstance kind of thing, rather than a this is our model going forward sort of deal.
So I like to think that's enough about anime and Kickstarters, huh?
Yeah, let's move on from that to other things. So other news that has caught our interest. Justin, you start.
Oh, me? Okay.
Yes.
The big thing for me is Sweetness and Lightning is going to get an anime, a TV anime. I was actually surprised. I wasn't sure exactly how well it was doing.
I literally have not heard about this. Oh my god. I love that manga.
Wait, what?
I did not hear about this. I'm just hearing about this right now from you.
Somebody has been missing out on the internet recently.
Oh my god. How did I miss that?
Breaking news. Sweetness and Lightning is getting an anime.
Oh my god.
Oh, I guess you're also reading the series.
Yeah, I've been following the series on Crunchyroll.
Yes, it's a... for those who don't know, Sweetness and Lightning, series on Crunchyroll manga, very sweet series. It has to deal with kind of a loss and then how to deal with the loss after that. Main character is a teacher who lost his wife, and now he has to basically take care of his young daughter. And how does he do that? He does it along the way with food. So combine food, young daughter, and high school student, and it actually turns out to be sweeter than you would possibly think that a series like this could be.
Mm-hmm. It's like a combination of what was it called? Like the really cute parts of Bunny Drop, not the other parts. Like the first half of that plus like food manga, you know, like learning how, like I feel like I could genuinely go and cook some of these issues if I really, you know, felt like it. It's like cooking manga slash, you know, family fuzziness, and it's absolutely adorable.
Yeah. So I can't wait to see that. I think it's coming out in the summertime.
Yay! Now I get to be hype over that.
Like, I just wonder if it's going to be, like, a short or if it's going to be, like, actual TV series.
Yeah. I could see it either way, to be honest, with the way it's formatted.
So that's my news that caught my interest.
So, Alcina, what news would you like to share that's caught your interest?
I think there's going to be an official Yaomushi pedal cycling team.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I saw it on Anime News Network. There was like a picture of the creator with the team and what tier they're going to be racing at. So this is on top of just like anything related to All Out. So this is rugby manga that's going to be an anime later in the year. They had figures at Wonder Festival, but they just recently released like the key visual for it, and it looks really, really good. Like just like the different characters, and it looks really exciting. Like this season, there was like Prince of Stride. Like I'm watching it, but I'm not too excited when I watch it. It's not like when I was watching Free or any of the other like Yaomushi pedals. Like guys get on bikes and they get pumped, and that's the show. They get really excited.
Yeah, it's not. Prince of Stride is good, but it's not the same feeling as Yaomushi Pedal or Free or any of those.
Yeah, I think I got to the point they're like talking about them psyching each other out in terms of the running, and then they have this giant drama, but I don't feel anything towards them. That's one piece of news. The other news is like, can I talk about there's some movie screening soon in this. I think there's only in the States. There isn't going to be in Canada, because I know Funimation's doing like Boy and the Beast and the Psycho Pass movies, as well as the Empire of those two movies in the month of March. I think The Boy and the Beast is going to be March 4th, and Psycho Pass is March 15th. But it looks, I tried to look up times for Canada, but we weren't included on the list this time, and that was a little bit sad. Like, I've already seen Boy and the Beast at the Toronto International Film Festival. There was, like, a North American premiere, and the director was there, and it's definitely a movie I hope other people will watch so I can talk to them about, but unfortunately not in Canada. Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh, and there was another thing that was, I think it was, there was going to be a project between Production IG and Netflix for a show that's going to be,
I think it's called Perfect Bones, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you talked about movies and stuff like that, I was thinking, oh wait, didn't Netflix just announce something?
Yep.
Yeah. That's actually a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very big deal. Like, there was this, I think there was a report last year that Netflix was going to start doing anime, but we weren't sure when, and now they're actually going to do it, and I'm just like,
yeah, they're actually making anime themselves rather than just taking shows and saying, oh, this is from Netflix, this is a Netflix original, but it's not.
And it's a simulcast title.
Yes! Simulcast! So excited. Like, Knights of Cydonia wasn't a simulcast. You have to wait until the end of the season, but at least you got, like, the dub and the sub and some other languages. I think there's IG in this season, too. I was, like, looking forward to seeing it, but I realized that Netflix has it, so it won't be able to see anything until the end of the season.
Yeah, somebody needs to explain to Netflix what simulcast actually means, but hopefully they'll get it this time.
Look, they should just talk to Funimation. They're the masters of simulcasting stuff, you know?
Yeah, I know that Netflix is, like, they're trying to make their model, because with all their other original series, it's just, here's the entire season all at once. And I know that's their model, but that with simulcast anime titles, that doesn't quite work the same, because it's like, it's airing, and then we get it after it's done airing. It's not like with the Netflix originals, where that's the only place you can get it, so it's released all at once.
Well, I feel like their original, like, I feel like the original series model has been working. Like for example, like the Marvel stuff, they did Beasts of No Nation, which is a movie technically, but they have, like, Orange is the New Black. What was the season? I think they had Making a Murderer, The Making of a Murderer, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, their original series has been really good.
Oh, yeah. No, their original series model works for their original series. It's when they license something in, that's when it gets a little weird.
Right, but then I heard, like for example, like, Knights of Cydonia, I don't know about season 2, but season 1, that really helped the manga series over here. Like, it took off, like, even more than, like, Echevest, the director, marketing director at Vertical. It took off, like, once it got on Netflix. That, like, this Netflix thing is a big deal. So, that's, whenever Perfect Bones comes out, we're gonna have to basically mark out our calendars just to see, like, what Netflix does with it.
Yeah, you just can't beat that exposure on Netflix.
And it's worldwide, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I think that's about it for news. How about you, Muse?
I just have a silly thing. I just saw this morning they've been teasing the images for the Osomatsu-san hug pillows, and they have the Jushimatsu one up now, and I'm like, oh my god, that's perfect.
So it's like the ones that look like the ones in the cartoon, and then the ones that are, like, more Bishonen style?
Yes, yeah, one side is the Bishonen style, and the other side is, like, the normal style, and it's just, I love that show. The way it's blown up has been incredible, and I love I love everything about it, just the marketing behind it, the way it's decided to present itself. I mean, I remember hearing about it, you know, before it aired, it was just like, oh, we're rebooting the 60s anime, and I was like, okay, and I had no clue about any of it, and then that first episode came out.
Now you can't even watch the first episode.
Yeah, now you can't, now it's banned forever, and we just have to hold it in our hearts.
That time when they emulated, like, Uta no Prinsama, and, yeah, you can't watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, they did that at the time they parodied every anime ever, and then I guess Japan doesn't have fair use, which was an interesting copyright lesson for me. But that was very odd. I mean, I could understand that later episode with the Anpan Man parody. Like, I can see why they got in trouble for that one. That was a little out there. But the fact that they, that wasn't the episode they pulled. It's the first episode that they pulled. That was weird. But yeah, it's just like, I love what it decided to do with itself and the fact that it's just blown up in the fan base and, you know, just proving that, you know, no, it's not necessarily character designs that attract Fujoshi to a series. It's just, you know, is it enjoyable to watch? Do you like watching these characters interact with each other? And you can run with that. And it's just, and it's really good humor. I mean, when I first started watching, I was like, I wonder if this is going to be too Japanese for me to get, and yet just the absurdity of it, I love it. So, I love Osomatsu-san, I love its ridiculous merchandise, and there is more of it coming out, so go look at the Jushimatsu hug pillow, it'll make you laugh. It's good.
Yeah. I'll definitely do that.
Yep, that's it on anime news. And Fire Emblem and everything else.
Oh, we want to keep talking about Fire Emblem? Oh, we can certainly just do that.
We will re-meet once Revelations is available for everybody, and then we can rip the storyline apart properly.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't actually finished enough of it.
We'll do a special episode, just put a giant spoiler warning on it. And then just
yeah, spoiler cast. Spoiler cast.
Yes. we'll just be a video game podcast for like one episode.
Yeah. Sorry guys, you just have to get your anime fixed somewhere else.
It's time to wrap things up anyway. So that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Muse. You can find me at Subdued Fangirl on Twitter and most other social media websites.
I am Justin. You can find me on Twitter at @Kami_Nomi. Gotta remember that, @Kami_Nomi.
And I'm Alcina. You can find me on Twitter as Kaito Al, which is KAITOU_AL.
All right, and that's our show. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.